Its fall from the letterbox, it separated itself, glided free of the rest, bills, nonsense, and landed face up, just where the mat meets the floorboards. A cool-looking oblong, office wiped, my name on the front, typed. No logo, no legible postmark, nothing of that sort. I picked it up and turned it over. On the back, printed on the flap, was a return address. Belfast, BT2, and a street whose name I did not recognise, but that I may have walked down 30 years ago. May well have done. I carried it through to the kitchen and put it on the table. The room was in shadow. Doesn't get the sun until early afternoon. I was still wearing what I'd slept in, t-shirt and boxers, my feet bare on the lino. Of course, might have been anything. One of those pieces of junk mail made to look like something else, something personal or some sort of outsourcing. The electricity company or the bank writing to me via a sourcing office in Northern Ireland. Like when you call to find out the train times from Frome to Bristol and you're talking to a woman in Bangalore who calls herself Julie. I tore a corner of the envelope and used my finger as a paper knife. Inside, a single sheet, typed on both sides. I read it, scanned it, really, then read it again more carefully and laid it back on the table. God help me, Maggie. If there had been any drink in the house, I would have had it. Pretty sure I would. There isn't, by the way, not a drop. Nothing hidden in a gumboot or out in the garden. I could have run down to the spa and pulled something from those glittering shelves I don't allow myself even to look at when I do the weekly shop. Then, please, picture the scene at the checkout. A middle-aged man in his underwear, clutching a bottle, holding out a banknote. Some of those boys and girls there know me. Not my name, but they see me often enough. Might have passed the time of day with me. Would they sell me a bottle? Would they not have to? Where is it written that you can't buy alcohol in your underwear at 10 in the morning? Anyway, I think they'd be frightened of me. In such moments, a wildness appears that is fairly obviously linked to self-destruction. I tried to calm myself with the breathing exercises Dr. Rauch has taught me. The slow inhalation through the nostrils, the touch of the breath entering the body. Then the out-breath, letting go that you can, if you choose, sound as a sigh. This is ancient wisdom, dusted off for a scientific age for the National Health Service, the Bristol Liver Unit. Someone was teaching it on the banks of the Ganges long before the Buddha was born. It may have saved countless lives. Steadier, a little, I went to the sink, filled a mug with cold water, drank it, rinsed the mug and went back to the table, picked up the letter again. Perhaps I got myself into a muddle, reading not what was really there, but what I was afraid might be. I read it a third time. There was no mistake. It is, in its way, plain enough. It comes from an organisation calling itself the Commission, and is signed by someone whose name, to me, sounds invented. Ambrose Carville. Ambrose? Is that an Irish name? He is, he says, a witness coordinator. And on behalf of the commission, he invites me to come to Belfast in October when they will be examining the events of the summer of 1982. I had never heard of the commission. I wondered if it was something to do with the Historical Inquiries Team, which is a police outfit that's been working through the Troubles year by year, 1969 onwards. I don't know where they've got to, how close to my year. I have, at some level, I suppose, been listening out for them. But if the commission is part of the same effort, they don't say so. What they do say, what Ambrose Carville says, is that they have no religious or sectarian affiliations, do not represent or work on behalf of any particular community. The word legacy is used twice. The phrase an open forum, the phrase thorough and impartial. Truth,